Tu B'Shvat is this Thursday. And so I want to look a little bit about the holiday of Tu B'Shvat, try to uncover some of the messaging of Tu B'Shvat through the lens of Tehillim. So we'll take chapter 1 of Tehillim, we'll go through it, and then we will hopefully gain some messages, some deeper understanding and appreciation of this Thursday, the holiday of Tu B'Shvat. So Tu B'Shvat is actually a very fascinating holiday, because if one looks through all of the Chumash, all of Tanakh, all of the Gemara, there's no mention of any holiday of Tu B'Shvat. Tu B'Shvat has no mention. What are we celebrating on Tu B'Shvat? Who?
The birthday of the
trees. Many people say the birthday of the trees. So what are we celebrating, though?
New
Year of the trees.
Renewal.
Right, rebirth.
I think Rabbi Fish said on Shabbos, it's like underneath the ground, like there's movement. There's some growth going on.
Getting ready.
On the surface,
right.
We don't see it.
Right, good.
Which is why we celebrate it now.
In the middle of the winter.
Yeah,
good.
Even though it seems like there's nothing happening underneath, it's really what's underneath.
Right, so we'll touch on that again. Good. So the only mention of Tu B'Shvat in the whole Gemara is in the first Mishnah in Tractate Rosh Hashanah. Source number one, and it's nothing to do with a holiday. It has no mention of celebrating any holiday. If you look at source number one in the packet, it says, the Mishnah says, Arba Rosh Hashanim Heim. There are 4 days of Rosh Hashanah in the Jewish calendar. So we think of Rosh Hashanah normally as what we call colloquially Rosh Hashanah, the first day of Tishrei. But says the Mishnah, there are really 4 days of Rosh Hashanah. Welcome. So, and these days of Rosh Hashanah all have some significance in Halacha. So we're going to talk about Tu B'Shvat, we're going to talk about the first day of Shvat, but all the days of Rosh Hashanah have some unique nafkamina, have some unique application to Halacha. So if you look at the Mishnah, so again, it says, Arba Rosh Hashanahim, there are 4 new years, 4 first of the year. So we're skipping now to what we're talking about. So the first opinion is, Be'echad B'Shvat. And that's Rosh Hashanah Le'ilon Kedivri Be'Shama. So we're always used to thinking that Tu B'Shvat, the 15th of Shvat, is the Rosh Hashanah of for the Ilanos, for the trees. But that's not true according to everyone. According to Be'Shamai, one opinion cited in the Mishnah, it's really the first of Shvat, which already happened. That's what Beis Shammai says. Beis Hillel Omrim B'chamisha Asar Bo. But Beis Hillel argues, they say, no, when is the holiday for the trees, for the fruit? That is what we normally celebrate. That is Tu B'Shvat, the 15th of Shvat. So we normally, in all of the Gemara, whenever we have a dispute amongst Beis Shammai and Beis Hillel, we always follow Beis Hillel. For example, on Chanukah, we don't think about this, but Beis Shammai actually, when they were lighting Chanukah candles, they started with 8 candles. And then they went to 7, then 6, then 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. Which is sort of anticlimactic. You're starting at 8. But Beis Hillel says, no. You start 1 on the first night, and you go 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. And of course, we follow the practice of Beis Hillel. We start with 1, and the last night of Chanukah, we go to 8. So here as well, we follow Beis Hillel. We don't follow Beis Shammai. We follow Beis Hillel. The Rosh Hashanah Le'ilanos, the new year for the trees, is the 15th of Shabbat, which again, is going to be this Thursday. But what application does it have in Halacha? What does it mean that it's a Rosh Hashanah for the trees? Right? It's not like Rosh Hashanah we have on Tishrei. You're allowed to do work. You're allowed to do Melacha. It's not a holiday. So in the actual Mishnah in the Gemara, Tu B'Shvat has very, very specific technical applications. So just a little bit of recap. This is not to get too in-depth over here, but in Eretz Yisrael, when you're living in the land of Israel, so there are a lot of rules when you're farming. There's something called Truma. You have to give Truma to the Kohen. You take a 40th or a 50th, and you give it to the Kohen. It's something called a Meiser. You have to give a 10th to the Levi. So there actually is a cycle. How do I know on what year which gift to give? You don't give every gift on every year. So there's a 7-year cycle. The 7th year is Shemitah. Shemitah, you don't work the land. You don't give any gifts. But years 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 have different rules. Every year you give a 10th of your produce to a Levi. That's called Meiser Rishon. Take a 10th of all the things that grew, give it to a Levi. However, there's 2 other types of meiser. Anyone know what they're called? 2 other types of meiser. One is probably what we're more familiar with. Well, when we think of meiser now, what do we give meiser to? Meiser normally is given to tzedakah.
Yeah.
So what we call meiser ani. Some years you have to give a 10th of your produce to an ani. And there's something called meiser sheni. Anyone know what meiser sheni is? Meiser sheni is, you don't give it to anybody. You have to bring the fruit to Yerushalayim and eat it there. So let's say you live in Haifa, you can't eat the Meiser Sheni in Yerushalayim. You actually have to bring the fruits to Yerushalayim and eat it there. Or you could redeem it on a coin, or a lot of coins, bring it to Yerushalayim and buy produce there to eat. That's called Maaser Sheni. So how do I know in what years do I give Maaser Sheni and bring the fruits to Yerushalayim? How do I know what years to give it to the poor? So the six-year cycle. On year 1, 2, 4, and 5, you bring the fruit to Yerushalayim. That's called Maaser Sheni. On year 3 and 6, you give your fruit to the poor person. That's called Maaser Ani. So it's a six-year cycle. 1 and 2, 4 and 5 are Maaser Sheni. You bring it to Yerushalayim. Year 3 and 6, you give it to the poor. So the question is, what's considered? How do I know when a new year is starting? What's considered a new year? So that is really what Tu B'Shvat, in the whole Mishnah, the whole Gemara, that is what Tu B'Shvat, the Skidophilians, has. That we don't go based on Tishrei, we don't go based on Rosh Hashanah, we go based on Tu B'Shvat, according to Beis Hillel. So any fruit that blossoms, we go by fruit, it's when it blossoms, not when it's picked. So any fruit that blossomed, that reached maturity before Tu B'Shvat, that's year number one. Whenever it blossoms after Tu B'Shvat, that's year number two. So Tu B'Shvat is always the break in when's considered the next year. So let's say Shemitah was last year, and now I'm at year number one. So any fruit that grows before Tu B'Shvat, it's year number one. After Tu B'Shvat is year number two, and so on and so forth. So it's a very, very technical application to what Tu B'Shvat really is in the Mishnah. And one other application of what Tu B'Shvat is something called Orla. Do you know what Orla is? Anyone heard of Orla? No wrong answers. Up here, there might be a wrong answer, but it's still going to throw it out. You know what Orla is? Emily, you know what Orla is?
I've heard of it, I can't remember. Some of the new fruits.
They give it to the poor?
So Orla is the first 3 years that you plant a tree, the first 3 years of fruit you can't eat it. That's Orla, which is an unbelievable thing. You have three, we'll get back to it maybe at the end, but you have 3 years of fruit. After you planted the tree, there's 3 years of fruit that you can't eat. You can't get benefit from it, you have to destroy it. On the fourth year even, you were thinking, now I waited 3 years, fourth year is a free-for-all, but it's not true. Fourth year, it's similar to what we called Maaser Sheni, the fourth year of all fruit trees, you have to bring that fruit to Yerushalayim and eat it there. It's called Netta Revai, the fourth year.
Only if you live in Israel.
So this halacha of Orla actually might apply even outside of Israel. It's a special halacha of Orla. It's only by certain fruits. So it's not by vegetables, it wouldn't be by a garden, but certain fruits, even outside of Eretz Yisrael, will have a halacha of Orla, if you know that it's planted. So that's a different time. We can talk about practical applications, but
Orla, right, applies everywhere, but only bringing the fruits to
Yerushalayim. Right, you're right, good. Nowadays, you're not going to bring the fruits to Yerushalayim. So actually, what people do is that you really have to, if you know you have Orla, let's say in Israel, what do they do in Israel? So Orla, you can't do anything. Orla, you have to get rid of it. Mm-hmm. But the fourth year, so either you eat Yerushalayim, which again, we said, right, it's not going to be practical, or you really redeem it on a coin. And you sort of have people have a coin in their drawer, and they keep redeeming all the fruits on that coin. Hopefully, you know, Mashiach will come soon, and we could use that money. But like, even when people are taking off truma and ma'aser, so in Israel, you have to know these halachas. People have to really take off truma and ma'aser. When you go visit Israel, if you don't go to a place, let's say, with the right hechsher, normally a place with a hechsher, they already took off truma and ma'aser. But if you go on, you know, you're on the side of the road somewhere in up north, and you want to buy some fruit, so you have to be careful because there is a process of taking off truma. Again, we don't give it to the kohen nowadays. It's like a challah, right? When we take off challah, that's really truma. So we don't give it to a kohen. Normally we burn it to make sure it's getting rid of. So this halacha of Orla is another application of Tu B'Shvat. And again, we'll take your question in a second. So why is Tu B'Shvat relevant? Because how do I know when year 1, 2, 3, and 4 end? How do I know when I'm going from year 1 to year 2, 2 to 3, 3 to 4? Tu B'Shvat. Tu B'Shvat is the new year of the fruit. And so many people actually, it's a little bit of a misconception, most people think that it's the new year of the trees, Rosh Hashanah le'ilanos. And yet, even the Mishnah does say it's for the Ilan, but it's not really for the actual tree. It's really for the fruit of the tree. Again, what we said, how do I know what year to who do I give it to? Do I give it to the poor in year 3 and 6? Do I take it to Yerushalayim in year 1, 2, 4, and 5? 905. So
do they mark the tree, the blossoms?
Seemingly, they have to remember, right? They have to remember
to
know what's what.
They have to know.
Right. If you have a huge orchard or a huge vineyard, you could have some trees that are 8 years old, some trees that are 2 years old, 4 years, 5 years old. So the farmer really has to keep track and know in Israel for sure what year he's up to, what year of the fruit.
Because if one were to go to purchase a fruit tree, you have the option of buying one that's a year old, 2 years old, 3 years old, four years old. Is it when you officially take possession of it?
Right. That's a good question. So it's a lot of complicated rules. It might depend on like how much you replanted it, how much you grew beforehand. So different topic, not for the Tehillim Shir, but yeah, it's like, you know, there's a whole tractate of Mishnah called Orla. And there's a whole tractate of Mishnah called Mice Vashemi. So these are big topics, and you know, hopefully Mashiach will come soon and we'll be able to have to be experts in all these rules. You just remind me that the Chafetz Chaim, he lived in, you know, Europe in the early 1900s, so he was always waiting for Mashiach to come. That was his thing. He always waiting for Mashiach to come. So he started a kollel where he got people to learn. And what did they learn? You know, in yeshivas now, what tractates do we learn? People learn what's called Bava Kama, that's Nezikin, that's what Ari's probably doing, or maybe Shabbos. But there's a whole order, one of the six orders, but two of them, one's about korbanos, and one's about ritual purity. So they're not, they have no practical relevance nowadays, really. So the Chafetz Chaim opened up a kollel where he brought in, he was also a Kohen, so he brought in people to study, hoping that when Mashiach comes, I mean, he felt when Mashiach comes, so how's everyone going to know the laws? It's not going to be magic that Hashem is going to put, people are going to have to know what to do. It's not going to be magic that Hashem is going to put it all into our minds. He thought people, Mashiach's going to come, and people are going to have to know what to do. So he opened up a kollel, it was called the Kodshim Kollel, where they only learned these laws about bringing sacrifices and about the Beis HaMikdash. So hopefully, you know, we'll also get more prepared with these agricultural laws.
This is a little tangential, but
you do that.
Is Mashiach coming and rebuilding the Beis HaMikdash, are those simultaneous occurrences?
Right, those two seem to be yes. Tchias HaMesim is like the interesting one, meaning when I was growing up, I always learned Mashiach comes and everyone comes back, you know, to life. Tchias HaMesim. That's not so clear. That's actually what happens. That Mashiach's going to come and then everyone's going to come back to life. That's not as clear. It's not as clear what's going to be.
But the Beis HaMikdash can't start being rebuilt until Mashiach comes.
So there's machlokes. I think there's a Rashi that says that the third Beis HaMikdash is going to come down miraculously from the sky. It's a question, are we going to build a third Beis HaMikdash or is it going to come down from the Shemayim? I think it's a Rashi that says, maybe he's going to crush it. But I think Rashi writes that it's going to come down miraculously from Shemayim. But then, fine, once it's there, now what do I do? By the day Mashiach comes, the next day I have to bring a sacrifice. What do I do?
Are we going to go back to sacrifices?
Yeah, seemingly. Yeah. Definitely at the beginning, yeah.
Is it going to be really busy?
That's what we daven for, right? We daven for the Hashiv Kohanim
Lavodasam.
That's the avodah. We see on the social goal, the Hashev Kohanim La'avodasam. Let's return the priest to their avodah, their work. So
that means we're not, sorry, I'll stop, because I just keep asking.
Seemingly, there will be sacrifice.
No, we're not, but then we do formal prayer in place of that, so then we'll be sacrifices and stuff.
Right. Although already in the second Beis HaMikdash, right in the second temple, they already had both. They already had davening and they had korbanos. But maybe the davening will change when Mashiach comes. It could be that the tefillah will change. Right, the davening originally was instituted in replacement of a korbanos, but even when the second temple was around at that point, they did have an overlap when they already started having a formal siddur and korbanos. So hopefully all these halachas become relevant soon, God willing. So, yeah.
Does Tu B'Shvat have anything to do with Yashin on the wheat, or no?
No, right, so that's a good point. Yashin on the wheat is by Pesach. That when in Israel, and even definitely for now in Israel, any wheat that grows, you can't use the new wheat until Chol HaMoed Pesach. They'll bring the Korban Omer, right? We're used to Sfiras HaOmer. They'll bring a certain sacrifice and Korban Omer on Chol HaMoed Pesach, the first day, and then they would be allowed to use all of the wheat for the previous year. That's called Yashan and then Chadash. So all the new wheat, Chadash, new, cannot be eaten until the Chol HaMoed Pesach. So there's a whole question of whether that applies in America or not. Already very, very early, Machlokes in the Gemara, does Yashan apply to America? So you have some people who are Mach, but they say, oh, I'm Mach, but I only eat Yashan. Because there's an opinion that holds that applies. Mach, but I'm strict. So I'll only eat products that were made with wheat that are a year old, or that were really grown and picked before the past Pesach. Other people hold that, no, it only applies in Israel. There are a lot of rules in agriculture that only apply in Israel. Truma and things like that. So that's a whole big discussion whether Yashan applies. So all these different rules, a lot to learn. But again, for Tu B'Shvat, which is the Rosh Hashanah of the fruit of the trees, so it tells you what year in the cycle you're up to, how do I know which of the Meisers to give, and how do I know how to count year 1, 2, 3, and 4. So again, you look through all the Mishnah, all the Gemara, there's no mention of Tu B'Shvat being a holiday. There's no mention of it being a happy day. It's a very, very financial day. How do I know what year in the count my fruit is up to? How do I know who the address of my gift should be? There's nothing about holiday or making it a special day, eating special fruit. That goal was from the Gemara, even in the Rishonim, most of the Rishonim, and even in the works of the Arizal. The Arizal was, of course, one of the beginners to introduce Kabbalah, already, you know, later on in the 1500s. So even in the writings of the Arizal, there's almost no mention of Tu B'Shvat. A lot of people nowadays view Tu B'Shvat as more of a holiday al-Pi Kabbalah, a deeper Kabbalistic holiday. Even in the writings of the Arizal, there's very, very little about Tu B'Shvat. But if you look at source number 3, slowly, as the generations go on, you slowly see, for some reason, Tu B'Shvat becomes more like a holiday. If you look at source number 3, so here, it's talking about Tachanun. So we know that Tachanun, if anyone goes to shul in the morning in Shacharis, Tachanun, the men, or even the women who go as well, you lean on your hand. It's a prayer where we ask God for forgiveness. So Tachanun normally is omitted on all happy occasions. So Tachanun, which can we beg Hashem for forgiveness. So Tachanun, we don't say it on Shabbos, we don't say it on Yontif. So if you look at source number 3 in the Shulchan Aruch, so he gives you other days where you don't say Tachanun, meaning there's something unique about these days that have some type of joy in them. We're going to skip the prayer called Tachanun, that special prayer we ask for forgiveness that's omitted on happy occasions. So source number 3, Nagu shelo lipol alpaneim, we don't fall on our face, that's a reference to Tachanun, b'tu ba'av. Tu B'Av also is like a minor holiday. The Gemara does say Tu B'Av is a very happy day. Right, it's about getting married and Shidduchim. So Tu B'Av is a unique day. And then what we want, the Shulchan Aruch writes, we don't say Tachanun on Tu B'Shvat. Quoting from earlier sources, he says, we don't say Tachanun on Tu B'Shvat. So why is that? What's Tu B'Shvat have to do with me? Tu B'Shvat, you look in the Mishnah and the Gemara, it's about agriculture. There's no day where I celebrate taking Truma. Right, when I go to my checkbook at home and I take hopefully a tenth off of my money and give it to tzedakah, it's not a holiday. Okay, it's a halach we have to do. We have to take off certain charities to give to the poor. So why is Tu B'Shvat suddenly, it's mixed in with Rosh Chodesh, with Tu B'Av. You see somehow that Tu B'Shvat made its way as a holiday. There's some message or some day of simcha, of joy that Tu B'Shvat have.
There's no halal,
right? There's no halal. We skip Tachanun. There's no halal, and even I think many people have the practice to fast on the day of their wedding. That's a common practice. If they could do it, they fast on the day of their wedding. So many say that on Tu B'Shvat you shouldn't fast. It's a day where you shouldn't fast. You should not fast. Just like on Rosh Chodesh, we're not going to fast. Or if you get married, let's say in other special days, say maybe in the month of Nisan also, we don't fast. So really here as well, to a fast, that's actually... Like, what do we do? Positive aspects of Tu B'Shvat. So it's only really number one. It's really only one. Turn the page in source number 4. There's really only one minag. What's the minag? What do we do on Tu B'Shvat?
Eat fruit.
That's really, again, besides from skipping Tachanun and not instituting a fast, the only other minag brought down in the halachic works, if you look in source number 4, this is who we quoted before, the Chafetz Chaim wrote a book on halacha called the Mishnah Berurah. So he writes that on that line where we say we don't say Tachanun, it's a happy day on Tu B'Shvat, he writes in source number 4, Shehu Rosh Hashanah Le'ilanos, it's the beginning of the new year. A new year has started for the trees, for the fruit. And then he writes, V'no'agin Ashkenazim. It was always a minig among the Ashkenazim communities, Laharbos az b'mine peros, to eat many fruits, Shele'ilanos, to eat the fruit of the tree. It doesn't even sound like that you have to eat just the seven minim. Right? Normally, there's the Shivas HaMinim. There are seven special species that belong to Israel. By pomegranates and grapes and wheat, the Mishnah Berurah sounds like you eat fruit. You have a lot of fruit. It's the first day of the new year for the trees, for the fruit. So the minhag is to have more and more fruit. And that, I think, has become a pretty positive act that people do. I think it's pretty common. In Israel, for sure, you go around to the stores around Tu B'Shvat, they're all selling, you know, like $99 platters of pomegranates. And you can make it yourself probably for like $9.99,
right.
They have these very fancy platters. There's a lot of schools they do Tu B'Shvat. And again, in the deeper work, they have something called a Tu B'Shvat Seder. Tu B'Shvat Seder, this is more like Kabbalah, more of the hidden works, but they have like sort of like a Seder. They have like even like 4 cups of wine.
Yeah.
similar to the Pesach Seder, and there are things that they say, certain tefillos they say. So that's more, I think, Api Kabbalah, the hidden Torah, and probably not as common, but definitely the practice to eat fruit, to appreciate the tree, appreciate the fruit, has become very popular. Mm-hmm. And again, the big question is, and we're not going to have such a perfect answer, the question is, why is it a holiday? Like, why is Tu B'Shvat a holiday? I don't make a holiday when I write a check to the poor, right? If I'm in Israel, I'm a farmer, I'm taking truma, right? We go home and, you know, Erev Shabbos, you make challah. So you separate a piece of challah. That's also, you're taking truma. Okay, we can't give it to the Kohen. You have to burn it. But there's no holiday. I don't make a holiday every time I take challah. It's a beautiful mitzvah. But I don't make a holiday every time I give one of these special agricultural either donations or bring it to Yerushalayim. So what about Tu B'Shvat is a holiday? What message are we taking through Tu B'Shvat? So many of the sources point to, again, this is not a perfect answer. I'm not also completely satisfied with it. But many point to the fact that throughout the Torah, one of the most common mashals, one of the most common parables that the Torah gives for people is a tree. Whenever the Torah wants to speak about some type of mashal about a person, about the growth of a person, so always, almost always about a tree. Often, the people are not normally compared to mountains or rivers or oceans. You almost always find when Hashem wants to compare a person to some type of item in nature, it's always a tree. And for many point out that seemingly there's some messaging to take on Tu B'Shvat. And why is it a holiday? Not so clear. But there's definitely some type of messaging to take on Tu B'Shvat, some type of messaging about trees, about the fruits of the tree, to take into our own lives as well. So let's just give two examples. Where does the Torah compare us to trees? So there are many, many examples that you can find. I put two. One from the written Torah, Torah Shebichsav, and one from Torah Sheba'al Peh. So look at source number 5. This is from Parsha Shlach. Parsha Shlach is when Moshe and the Jewish people sent the spies, sent the Miraglim, to go look out, to go spy the land of Israel, to see what was the best way to conquer it. Again, it didn't end up working out so well. Out of the 12 spies, 10 did not come back with a good report and did not behave properly, and they were punished. Only 2, Yoshua and Kalev, they did come back with a positive report, and they were rewarded. And because of this error of the spies, the Jewish people had to wander in the desert, really, for 40 years until most of that generation was killed out. But what happened? When Moshe first gave the command to the spies, what did he tell them to go check out? So look at source number 5. He told the spies, Umaha aretz, go look at the land. Hashmeinahi, is it rich? Is it fertile? Imraza, or is it weak? Does it produce very weak type of produce? Hayesh bah eitz imayin. Does it have trees in it or not? And then he says, v'his chazaktem, you should be strong. Ulakachtemi priyaret, bring us back some examples of the fruit. And then it says, v'ayamim, you may be korei anavim, and the time he sent them was the harvest of the grapes. But what does he mean? What is he asking the spies, hayesh bah eitz imayin? Is there a tree in there? What does Moshe want from the spies? Go tell me if there's a tree. There's probably a tree in Israel. What does it mean, is there a tree? So Rashi writes in source number 6, what was Moshe really asking the spies? Hayesh ba eitz, im yesh bahem adam kasher. Go look in the land of Israel, among all the nations, is there any righteous person that's going to protect them, that's going to give us problems? We want our divine assistance to go and wipe out our enemies in Israel, but make sure, try to see, is there any tzaddik, is there any righteous person amongst the 7 nations or the many nations who is going to give them merit? And that's what Rashi says, im yesh bahem adam kasher, is there a righteous person, she yogin aleim b'schuso, who's going to enable God to protect them because of his merit. But what do you see? When Moshe wants to tell the spies, go look if there's a righteous person amongst the inhabitants of Israel, what does he call it? Hayesh ba eitz. A righteous person is compared to a tree. And so when Moshe wants to tell the spies to go look if there are any tzaddikim, he says, go look if there are any trees. So again, you see the first source where clearly there's some type of interesting mashal between a tzaddik, a righteous person, and that of a tree, of a fruit-bearing tree. That is in the written-in law. Let's give one more example, and this is a very well-known Gemara. It's also a song, but first it was a Gemara. So in source number 7, this is from the oral law. So the English sort of goes over to page number 3, if you want to look at the English. So the Gemara gives a story of 2 rabbis who are visiting one another, and you can tell me if you recognize this, the Gemara, this song. When the two rabbis would leave each other, Amar Alei. So one rabbi asked the other rabbi, Livarchen Mar, please give me a blessing. We spent time together, now we're going to separate. You're a great rabbi, please give me a blessing. That's what one rabbi asked the other. So what did the other rabbi answer? He said, Amar Alei. He told him, Emshel Achamashel, I'll give you a parable. Lemata Verdoma, what is our situation compared to? La'adam shahaya holech b'midbar. Imagine you have a person, he's walking in the desert, the hot desert, v'yaroiv, he's hungry, v'ayif, he's tired, tzameh, he's thirsty, umatze ilan. And all of a sudden, he's walking in this brutally hot desert, all of a sudden, he finds a tree, sheperosa mesukin, it has very sweet fruits, v'tzilo na'at, beautiful shade, v'amas hamayim v'veres tachtov. So a person, he's dying in the desert, all of a sudden, he sees a beautiful tree that has fruits, it has shade, it has a whole stream of water running underneath it. So the man was saved. Achmi Perosov, he ate the fruits. Shasami Meimav, he drank the water. V'yasha v'silo, and he sat in the shade. Ukeshebikesh lelech, and then this man wanted to leave, and he was going to go home. So Amar, and this is where the song kicks in. Elon, Elon, Bama Avarechecha. Anyone familiar with it? Anyone familiar? Yeah. I'm not going to sing it now. I don't want to, you know, in a holy place, I don't want to sing my voice. But it's a song, Ilan, Ilan, Bama, Avarechecha. He says to the tree, how can I bless you? Im omer lecha, sheyu perosecha mesukin. What, I should give you a bracha that your trees should bear sweet fruit? Hare perosecha mesukin. I tasted your fruit, they're already sweet. I'm not giving you a bracha for sweet fruit. You already have that. What should I give you a bracha for? Sheyehei tzilchanaya, that you should have beautiful shade? Hare tzilchanaya, you already have shade. Should I give you a bracha tree that you should have a beautiful stream of water going underneath you? You already have that. So what can I give you a bracha for? So what did the man tell the tree? Ella, Yehi Ratzon, the only bracha I can give you, and this is a beautiful Gemara, shekol netil shenoti mimcha, all other fruit trees that come from you, yekemozcha, should be like you. That's the mashal the rabbi gave. And so now come back to real life. What did one rabbi tell the other rabbi? Same thing. Afata, what can I give you a bracha for? Bama avarechecha. Im b'torah, what, I should give you a bracha that you should be great in Torah? Hare Torah, you already are a great Torah scholar. Im b'osher, hare osher, apparently he was wealthy. I can't give you a bracha for Torah. You have Torah. For wealth, you have wealth. Im b'banim, to be able to be married, to have children, hare banim. That person had children already. What's the only bracha I can give you? You too, the only bracha I can give you is all of the offspring, maybe the real children, your students, should be like you. So very beautiful Gemara. That, another time where you see that this righteous person is being compared to a tree. So we have Moshe in the written law, he's comparing people to a tree, a righteous person to a tree. Then we have the Gemara, they're giving a beautiful parable about a righteous person being compared to a tree. So what is the messaging? And there are maybe tens and hundreds of messages you can take from Tu B'Shvat, the comparison between a righteous person and a tree. But this is the Tehillim class, of course. We always try to get the Tehillim at some point in the class. So let's look now in verse number one. If you look, just continue on the source sheet. So I sort of put the Tehillim just mixed in with the rest of the sources. So let's read chapter number one. This is the first chapter of Tehillim. Very significant. David HaMelech chose that this is going to be the opening chapter of Tehillim, chapter number one. It's a chapter which, I don't know if it's not really said in shul so much. People, I think a lot of levayas, a lot of funerals sometimes, yeah. You'll say the first chapter of Tehillim. Some people on Yom Kippur, on Kol Nidre night before they go home, they'll say the first four chapters of Tehillim. So let's read through the psukim quickly. Then we're going to go back and try to draw out some messaging, and hopefully one which will shed some light on this comparison between a human being on a tree, and try to take a certain message for Tu B'Shvat. So let's read together the verses now in Tehillim. It's a short chapter, 6 verses, 5 are on this page, and then the next we'll turn the page. So it says, David HaMelech in Tehillim. Ashrei Ha'ish, again, these are the opening words. The whole book of Tehillim, these are the opening words. So Ashrei Ha'ish, asher lo halach b'atzas rishoyim. Praiseworthy is the person that does not walk with the wicked, doesn't follow the advice of the wicked, ubederech chatoyim lo amad, doesn't stand in the pathway of the ones who could do evil, uvimoshav leitzim lo yashav, and doesn't sit amongst leitzim, which are scorners, which are people who are sort of wasting their time. So David praises people who, A, Don't walk with the Rishayim, don't stand with the sinners, and don't sit with the scoffers, the scorners. So what should a person do? That's what a person shouldn't do. That's what praiseworthy a person does not do. So what should a person do? So if you look in verse number 2, Pasuk Beis, Ki'im b'toras Hashem cheftzo. Instead of hanging out with the people who are not good influence, praiseworthy is a person who spends his time in the Torah of Hashem, meditating, learning the Torah, ubitoraso yege yom v'layla, and to meditate in his Torah day and night. And then, this is what we want to look at, verse number 3. What happens if a person takes David HaMelech's advice? He doesn't stand amongst the wicked, he doesn't hang around the people who are not a good influence, but rather he studies Torah, he does mitzvos. What is he compared to? Again, another time where we see, here in the opening chapter of Tehillim, v'haya ke'etz shosol al pagimayim. This righteous person will be like a tree who is good, he's firmly planted with a source of water, asher pirio hitein bi'ito, that his fruits will develop and will be produced at the right time, v'aleu lo yibol, even his leaves will not wither, his leaves will be strong, v'chol asher yaseh atzliach, anything he tries to do, God will be by his side and God will help him. Again, a person who is righteous is compared to this tree that's rooted in the ground with a good source of water, which is good fruit. That is the ideal, mashal, parable of a person compared to a tree. Let's finish up the last three verses before we go back slowly. Lo chein arishayim. That's all by a righteous person. But a evil person, a sinner, he's not going to be like a firmly planted tree. What's he going to be like? Ki im kamotz. He's going to be like the chaff. Asher tetfenu ruach. That's very easily scattered by the wind. He's not going to have roots. He's going to be easily blown away by God. Then in verse number 5, Al kein lo yakumo rishon b'mishpat, and therefore, this evil doer is compared to the chaff. He will not be able to stand up when God gives his judgment. B'chatoyim ba'adat tzadikim, and the evil doers will not be able to have a place amongst the righteous. If you turn the page, the last verse, chaff is like the when they had the wheat comes in the stalks. So the heavy part is the wheat, and the chaff is the light part. They sort of blow away. One of the malachas on Shabbos is called the Zoret. It's like to, I don't know. Yeah, and to winnow, maybe that's the word, winnow.
Yeah.
So you would throw it up in the air and the heavy part would come down. I imagine nowadays it's probably a better way to do it. I don't know what the farmers do. I imagine some like robot or some machine.
Yeah.
But before that, they would throw the heavy part up and the wheat will come down. And the chaff, which is so light, has no substance to it, will get blown away. So that's what Dov is comparing the evildoer to someone, there's no real substance there. He doesn't have roots. He doesn't have so much meaning. He's blown away by the wind. And then the last verse in number 6, V'chiyodei Hashem derech tzadikim, because Hashem knows the way of the righteous. Kiyodei Hashem derech tzadikim, Hashem knows the ways of the righteous. V'derech Hashem toved, and he will destroy the path of the evildoers. So that is a chapter of Tehillim. Again, just the structure, it sounds like David first is telling you what to not do. Make sure you're in the right company. Don't be with those evildoers and the ones who are committing sin, who are a bad influence. Rather, put yourselves in good company amongst those who do mitzvos, study Torah. And if you do that, you're going to be like a tree, a firmly rooted tree that has substance, that has meaning. And if you don't do it, you're going to be like that chaff that's very easily blown away. So let's now go into the sources now. Let's analyze, go back and sort of in a slower way, analyze at least the first three of these psukim. And this is where I want to take out, hopefully, a message for Tu B'Shvat that we can take with us for Thursday. So first, the Radak, in source number A, we quoted him, I think, the last couple of weeks, Rav David Kimchi, one of the great commentators on Tehillim. So in his opening remarks on all of Tehillim, he says, why did David pick this chapter? It's very important, right? When a person is making a CD, the first song is very important. That's the first thing someone's going to hear. You're writing, you're making a movie, the first scene, you're giving a drush and shul, you got to give a good story or a good joke because the first 2 minutes are bad, everyone's already asleep. So you have to catch people when in the opening.
Yeah.
So David, for clearly there's a reason why he chose this chapter of Tehillim to be the first one. There's 150 chapters.
Right.
I think we're actually at number 10. This is our 10th chapter we've done so far, so we're almost there, you know, a 15th of the way there. So why did David choose this chapter to be his opening? It says the Radak, because the messages here really can, it's an overlap. It really, it's a broad message, a broad instruction for what we should do in our life. It says the Radak in source number 8, the Kalal David Bazeh Mizmor. David included in this short chapter, 6 verses, but David included so much meaning. Torah Sa'adam. What is the purpose of someone's life? What are the instructions? How do we live a meaningful life? Umash ro'i lo lasos. What is fitting of a person to do, bazeh olam, when we're in this world? Ve'ha gemul ha'tov, and the reward, letzadikiv, the good reward that the righteous will enjoy. Ve'ha onish l'rishayim, and unfortunately on the other side, the punishment that will come for the rishayim. So these big, big theological ideas of reward and punishment and evildoers and tzaddikim, that is the first chapter of Tehillim. V'hu mizbor nichbad me'od. Very powerful line. You don't see the Rishonim say it so much. He's commenting, he's saying it's a beautiful mizmor. It's a very, very special chapter of Tehillim because of the messaging and the description and the imagery that it portrays. Lefikach, and that is why Hachel Sifro Bo, that's why David started. Out of the 150 chapters of Tehillim, David started his book of Tehillim with chapter 1, this chapter of Tehillim, because of the instruction that it gives, the charge that it gives, hopefully the inspiration, the chizik that it gives for what a meaningful Jewish life should look like. That's the redacted introduction. So now I want to focus really on the first two psukim. Let's look at the first two psukim. We don't always focus so much on the very intricate language, but let's go back for a second on the first two verses, and this is where we're going to hopefully take away a message from this chapter for Tu B'Shvat. Look at verse number 1. So David really repeats the same thing three times. David says, Ashrei ha'ish, praiseworthy is the person, A, asher lo halach be'atzas rishayim. He did not walk with the council. He didn't walk amongst the wicked. And then that's one. Another similar thing, it sounds exactly the same, but then he changes the word a little bit. U'bederech chatoim lo amat. And he didn't stand amongst the sinners. So first he said, he didn't walk with the evildoers. He didn't stand with these sinners. And then the third time, again, it sounds like he's repeating himself a third time, uvimoshav leitzim lo yashav. And he did not sit amongst, again, the scorners, the scoffers.
Sounds like very negative.
It's very negative, right? It's repeating itself over three times.
Whoa.
And it's three different examples,
yeah.
Three different descriptions. One, he's talking about walking. Don't walk with the evildoers.
Yeah.
Two is, don't stand among them.
Yeah.
And three is, don't sit. So what are these? What is the meaning? What's the right walking, standing, and sitting? It's really the same messaging. Don't hang out. I can say it in one sentence.
Yeah.
Pick good company, right? Pick good friends. But David says it in three different ways. Don't walk with them, don't stand with them, and don't sit with them.
But why does it say stand in the way?
Not in the way. Yeah, I think I don't think it means in the way like blocking their way. I think like it's not the best translation. In the way meaning in their path. Not like in the way of blocking. I think here it means like more in the way of, like in their path. But what are these three images we have? We have walking, standing, and sitting.
Maybe like different stages of a person's life.
What do you mean?
Like, I know there's like an example when there's a baby and then they become an old person. Like, you know.
Different times of a person's life.
Yeah, like walking.
Interesting.
Oh,
you're saying like different ages of your life,
yeah.
Always have to be careful in
yeah.
Who your company
like
is. Interesting.
The life, like from the baby, the infant, toddler, to like getting to
it's always important.
Person.
Right. I hear
like
very beautiful.
Sitting.
Very interesting.
Like walking.
Standing, sitting. Different.
Like the most active to the middle and then to the least
right.
Active.
Throughout your whole life. Interesting. Very interesting.
It just emphasizes it.
Three times, over and over again. Right. I hear. Right. Interesting
it's
point.
All,
very beautiful.
It's all with the body. It's not saying verbally.
Right. Don't stand with them. Don't sit with them. Don't walk with them.
Walk, stand, sit.
Right.
Do
what?
Don't
do anything.
Don't
right.
Do business.
Don't
do
anything.
Leisure, don't do this. Don't spend time with them.
Right. It's trying to cover all its ground, all the bases.
I think it's how invested you are in something. Because when you're sitting, it's much more difficult to leave, just say a conversation on it. Leave it. Because you have to get up and leave. You're standing kind of in the middle. It's still maybe a little bit awkward, but it's not as noticeable. And if you're walking by, like, hey, how are you? You know, you're just. Pressing.
It's not as permanent. It's not as much of a. You're not establishing yourself among
right.
them.
Establishment.
Good.
Doesn't.
Beautiful. So all beautiful answers. So see, Bonnie's on her game. You don't need Wordle. See, we do it to Hillen class every day. You don't need Wordle. Your mind is just the.
Yeah.
Last week also, Bonnie was.
Bonnie's
on her game.
If you're not.
Yeah.
Which is basically being present with the wicked.
Right, being right.
then you will not be able to converse or have contact or be manipulated or be...
Right. It's about putting yourself in, like not putting yourself in that situation. If you're not there, you can't get influenced.
Right.
It's all about choosing who your surroundings are. That's a big, very good. What do you say? Right. Right. To be amongst good influence. The Rambam writes in, a couple of places writes that a person's automatically influenced by his surroundings. You can be the strongest person. The Rambam writes, I don't care how strong you are, how much willpower you have, a person is always influenced by his surroundings. So half of the battle is putting yourself in the right situation. Okay, so let's look, and this is what Bani was, I think, alluding to. Very good. Let's look in source number 9. Again, all beautiful answers. Let's see what the Gemara says. The Gemara picks up on this. The Gemara picks up on these three languages. First, walking, then standing, and then sitting. So let's look at source number 9. This is from the Talmud and Avodah Zarah. Darash Rosh Shimon ben Pazi. Mai tichsev, what does the pasuk mean? This chapter of Tehillim. Ashrei ha'ish, praiseworthy is a person. Asher lo halach ba'atas reshoim, he didn't walk among the wicked. Ubederach ha'toim lo amar, he didn't stand among them. But Moshe of Leitim lo yasha. Says the Gemara, very powerful line. This is what I really want to pick up on. Ela lomar lecha, she'im halach, if you start walking among them, sofo lamur. Then very, very soon, you're going to be standing with them. Meaning walking is not so established. I'm sort of walking by them. But if you start walking with them, you have to be very careful. It's a slippery slope. Once you start walking with people who are not the right chevra, very, very soon, you're going to be standing with them. V'im amad. And if you stand with them, you have to be very careful. It's a very slippery slope again. Sofo leshe. Then you're going to be sitting with them. You're going to be in their group. V'im yashav. And if you end up sitting with them, then it's very difficult to escape, like we said. Sofo lalutz, then you're going to become one of them. So the way the Gemara picks up on this pasuk is, it's talking about three different stages of being influenced. First, a person thinks, I can walk. I'll walk with them. Walking sort of connotes not really such a close relationship. You know, I'm walking home from shul with someone, so I don't have the closest friend with them. We're walking home from shul. Once you stand and you're stopping and talking to them, that's a little more established. Then you go home and you invite them to your house and you're sitting with them. So then it's game over. So it's really three steps of how a person is influenced. A person starts walking, a person then stands, and a person sits. And says the Gemara, you have to realize that once you start the walking, you have to be aware of step number 2 and step number 3. And this is really what we want to get to, first in the negative and the positive. A person has to realize that you have to see to the future, right? What do we say in Pirkei Avos? Ezu chacham, havro es anolad. You have to see the future. We have to live in the future. We can't only make decisions based on what we have in the here and now. You could think, I'll walk with the Rishayim. What's going to happen to me? I'll hang out with them a little bit. Says the Gemara, based on the Psukim. Yeah, but then you're going to get to Amad. Then you're going to stand with them. And very, very soon, you're going to get to Yashav, and you're going to sit with them. So that's what David HaMelech is saying in verse number 1. That you have to see into the future. You have to be Roa et Anolad. Don't only live in this moment. There's a future. You have to plan for the future. When you make decisions now, realize it's not only going to affect my decision today, on Tuesday morning at 9:40. Okay, I guess I'm coming to a stop through 9:40. Okay, so it's not only affecting my decision Tuesday at 9:40, but it has long-term effects. And therefore, if I think I'm going to just walk with the Rishayim, be very careful, because maybe next week you're going to stand. Maybe a year from now you're going to sit. And one has to realize that the decisions now don't only affect the here and now, but also affect long term. That's the imagery of halach, walking, amad, standing, and then yashav, sitting. That's in the negative. Let's now turn to verse number 2. And this is, again, I thought it was so beautiful when I was thinking about this last couple of days. Let's go back to verse number 2. And that's all in the negative, but it's true in the positive as well. This idea of realizing that the decisions you make now and the actions we're doing now have a long-term effect. It's not only true for the negative. Whatever is true for the negative is much, much more true and much more meaningful for the positive. Okay, look at verse number 2. Ki im betoras Hashem cheftzo. So David says, don't be amongst the wicked. Rather, study Hashem's Torah. Ubesorasso. And in his Torah, yege yomam v'layla. You should delve in and study day and night. So what's Torah so mean? His Torah. Who's His Torah? So the simple meaning is Hashem's. So rather, you should spend your time learning Hashem's Torah. And in His work, in His teachings, you should be Yege, you should be Yomam V'layla. So that's the simple meaning. So I just went back for a second to verse number 2. Yeah, we're going to continue in the sources. But we're still looking at source number 2, verse number 2. And it says, Ki'im b'toras Hashem cheftzo. Here at the bottom here, on page 3, what has the actual back into Tehillim, the verses of Tehillim. We're back into Tehillim, yeah, verse number 2. So that was verse number 1 we spoke about. And now we look at verse number 2. And you can just listen outside. We're going to come back to the real sources. But verse number 2 says, rather, Ki'im b'toras Hashem cheftzo. You should study Hashem's Torah. And in His words, you should delve day and night. So Torah so, the literal meaning is Hashem. I just said study Hashem's Torah. So the David is repeating himself, ubisoraso. And in His works, you should spend your day and night. So now, sorry for the confusion, now we're back on the back. And this is the last thing we're going to read inside. This is source number 10, the last source. Rashi picks up, based on the oral law, the beautiful idea. Again, it starts out Torah Hashem. Learn Torah Hashem. Study Hashem's words. And then the verse says, Ubisoraso. And in His Torah, spend your days and night. It says Rashi, beautifully, beautiful message. Betchila he nikreis Torah Hashem. When a person first starts to learn, it's called Torah Hashem. It's God's Torah. It's very hard to connect to it. When a person starts on their journey of learning Torah and doing mitzvot, it's called God's Torah. It's sort of up in the heavens. It's very hard to connect to it. It seems very obscure, very abstract. But when a person spends days and weeks and years learning it and working on it, nikreis Torah so. It becomes your Torah. The word Torah so in the pasuk doesn't mean Hashem's Torah. It means your Torah. So the verse says, ki im b'toras Hashem chetzo. If you start learning Hashem's Torah, eventually, ubisoraso, in your Torah, Yegyom Valayla. It's going to become your Torah. It starts out at the beginning of the journey, Hashem's Torah, up in the heavens, very obscure. But by the end, it becomes your Torah. And this actually has real halachic ramifications. The Gemara talks about, can a Rebbe forgo his honor? Let's say you have a teacher or a Rebbe, a big rabbi. Can he forgo his honor? Can he be mochel on his kavod? Mochel means to forgo, to forgive his honor. Let's say, you know, he's waiting to wash his hands for the communal lunch. He's the big rabbi, but he sees a younger person who wants to wash his hand. Is he even allowed to let the student wash first?
Is he going to knock him out of the way?
No meaning everyone's letting the rabbi go first. Is the rabbi even allowed to let a student go before him? He's a humble guy, but maybe not. He represents God's Torah. Maybe he should not be able to be mochel his kavod. For example, a king. There's a rule that a melech, a king, cannot be mochel on his kavod. A king, because he represents God, and he's the leader, he can't forego his honor. And so when someone wants to honor him, he can't say, you know what, I don't want it, I'm very humble, just don't honor me, you know, give it to somebody else first. You're the king. You have to be the leader of the people. So the question is, how about a big Torah scholar? He's representing God's Torah. So maybe the same thing. Maybe a person should not be able to be mochel his honor, forego his honor, but they call it because of this pasuk. When a person studies so much, it becomes his Torah. It's not God's Torah anymore. It becomes my Torah. Therefore, if it's my Torah, I am allowed to forgo my honor. A melech represents God. He can't forgo his honor. But when a person learns and studies and works on himself, it transforms from God's Torah to his Torah. And therefore, you own it. You're the owner of the Torah and the mitzvahs. It was in the heavens. The Torah was in the heavens. But when you work and work and work and internalize it, it becomes your Torah. And therefore, I'm the owner of it, so I can forgo my honor. It's my honor. It's no longer God's honor. It's my Torah. It became part of me. That's a side point. But I thought so beautifully that verse number 2 is really the parallel of verse number 1. Verse number 1 is talking about, when you're talking about the evil, the bad, realize that there's a future. Look into the future. When you start walking with the Rishayim, one day you're going to stand with them. One day you're going to sit with them. So too for the positive. A person has to realize when they start their journey, it's very difficult. You start trying to keep mitzvot, you start trying to learn, it's God's Torah. Shabbos is impossible. Kashrus is impossible. Learning Torah is impossible. Coming to an 8:45 a.m. class is impossible. It's God Torah. It's very obscure. A person has to realize that all the effort they're putting in now, there'll be fruits. There's going to be a result for the positive as well. And just like on the side of negative, by the Rishayim, a person has to realize that the actions you do now might have detrimental future effects. So too for the positive. When a person is doing a mitzvah, a person could think, I'm doing one silly mitzvah. What really is going to happen? Or, I'm learning a little bit of Torah. You know how big the Torah is? You go to the Beis Medrash, you know how many books there are in the Torah? So me studying one page, I'm learning one chapter of Tehillim. How's that going to help me? But for the positive also, a person has to realize that the actions you do now have very, very far-reaching effects. Every mitzvah we do will lead to an effect years down the line. Everything I study, years down the line. Oh, so let's get back to the fruit now. So that's the messaging in Tehillim. Good. So I guess it made sense. So that's the fruit. What's a fruit tree? What's the difference between planting a fruit tree and planting vegetables? So I did some good scientific research with Wikipedia yesterday. Uh-huh. That's my most scientific research. Uh-huh. And it seems to me, I can be corrected, it seems that the amount of time it takes to grow a certain type of fruit tree, from the time you plant the seeds, again, there are exceptions to the rule, is much, much more than vegetables. Mm-hmm. Some vegetables, you can plant the seed and you can have it 30 days, yeah. 60 days, constantly regrowing itself. What happens when you plant a fruit tree? It could be months, it could be years until anything comes out. Yeah. And we said at the beginning, that's only physically. Let's say I plant my fruit tree, 2 years later my apple tree grows. Then what happens the next 3 years? You can't eat it. So that's 2 years after you planted the seeds that it can't grow. It's grown, there's no fruit. Then in halacha, the next 3 years you can't eat it. That's 5 years after you planted the tree. And the fifth you can eat it if you want to buy an LL ticket and fly to Yerushalayim. So that's almost at 6 years after you planted the fruit tree where you basically see no results. As opposed to a vegetable, you can see results right away. There's no arla by vegetables. Vegetables grow, you can eat it right away.
Do they keep growing? If you plant vegetables, will they like on their own grow every year?
I think once it's established. Right, I think not. I think not. I think most vegetables you have to replant it. A fruit tree and apple tree, you don't have to replant an apple tree. So it takes 6 years combined physically and halakhically to get any fruit from your labor. But once, like Emily said, once those 6 years pass, so you really have to do nothing more. That apple tree will grow fruits forever. So I thought this one message, that perhaps that's one of the messages why a man's compared to a tree. Just like a fruit tree, I'm planting the seeds now, month is going to go by, 2 months, a year, 2 years, 5 years is going to go by, I literally saw no results from my work. I worked so hard planting this apple tree, and years went on, and I got no results. That's true also in our own avodas Hashem. At the beginning, it's Hashem's Torah. At the beginning, it's very obscure. It seems like my mitzvahs are having no impact. Or even like a child rearing. I'm putting in all this effort to deal with my child. What's going to happen? Like he's this little child. What am I doing? He's keeping me up at night. And he's causing me so many issues, giving me gray hairs. A person has to have a long-term vision. A person has to realize in all things that have Avodas Hashem, for the bad and for the good, it's a long-term vision. And when a person has a decision to make with a challenge, let's say, a negative enticement, the person has to realize, don't only think about what's going to happen right now. If I do this act, what's going to happen 5 years down the line? And this mitzvah, don't only think, what positive am I going to get from this mitzvah right now? But what's going to happen years down the line? So perhaps, again, based on this chapter of Tehillim, perhaps that's one of the messages of Tu B'Shvat. We saw a couple of sources that the righteous person is compared to a tree. Maybe that's one message. Just like a tree, for many, many years, you're not going to see the fruit of your labor. So true in Avodas Hashem as well, for the negative and for the positive. We often don't see immediate results, but we really have to look into the future. People we hang out with, the community we live in, the actions we choose, we have to think about not only the here and now, but how is it going to affect me 5 years from now? This is one message from Tu B'Shvat. Hopefully you can take it. And I encourage you, as the days go on until Thursday, we have to think about Tu B'Shvat a little more. What's the messaging of Tu B'Shvat, and what lessons can we take from the tree? Thank you.